Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 47 of Wheat All About It. In this episode, I'm bringing back a segment last heard in episode 31, the World Wheat O'Clock Report. Each month, I sift through dozens of periodicals, newspapers, and online sources to find articles that I believe Eastern Washington farmers, landlords, agribusinesses, and consumers interested in the wheat industry may find compelling. The Wheat O'Clock Report includes international and domestic news about events, products, and trends affecting farmers and our favorite crop. It's how I imagine the media might cover wheat if there wasn't enough of it. Without further ado, I bring you the World Wheat O'Clock Report. Hello, I'm Scott Yates with today's World Wheat O'Clock News. The major headline, and the winner is... Otto, a Washington State University release, traded places with SY Ovation, a Syngenta variety, as the most widely grown soft white wheat in eastern Washington in the 2016-2017 season. Curiosity CL Plus, a two-gene herbicide-resistant variety, came in third, followed by ORCF-102, one of the first single-gene Clearfield varieties to be released from Oregon State University's program. Westbred Monsanto WB1529 rounded out the top five. Meanwhile, Breel was knocked off its longtime perch as the most widely grown club variety. ARS Crescent is now the top dog largely because of falling number issues that confronted Breel in 2016. Keldon and LCS Jet are vying for number one in hard red winter acres, with Keldon just edging out the Lima Grain variety. SY Clearstone 2CL, a Syngenta variety with two-gene herbicide resistance, is number three. Soft White Spring Acres saw Louise at the top of the leaderboard, followed by Westbred Monsanto's WB6121, and then Diva. In the hard red spring category, it was Glee in the number one position, followed by Kelts and Espresso. Rain Dance Central. August is officially a couple of months in the rearview mirror, but inquiring minds want to know, how did precipitation totals from September 1st, 2016 to August 30th, 2017 turn out? The seasonal calendar is one kept by the National Agricultural Statistics Service. In percentage over normal terms, Lind, Washington took first, with precipitation for the season that put it at 149% of normal for a total of 14.78 inches of moisture. Ritzville had more precip at 17.08 inches, but only enough to put it at 139% of normal. Spokane stood at 142% of normal at the end of the season with 23.53 inches of moisture. Pullman saw 24.92 inches of moisture, which put it at 119% of normal. Walla Walla had 20.63 inches of precip, 99% of normal. The winner for largest percentage over normal in Washington was recorded at the Hanford Station, which had nearly twice as much rain and snow for the season as usual, with 13.20 inches of precipitation falling in the desert environment. Supersize Me! A farmer in Kansas farming more than 30,000 acres can make a healthy profit even during periods of low prices, said a Wall Street Journal article recently about Lon Fromm, who estimates farms of his size can produce $10 to $15 million worth of grain in a good year, reaping anywhere from $1 million to $3 million in profit, or a 10 to 20% return on investment. The government recently said a smaller farm with just $500,000 worth of sales over the last 3 years generated a 5% profit margin, or about $25,000 annually. Farms with $1 million or more in annual sales, about 4% of total U.S. farms, produce two-thirds of the country's agricultural output. The increasing size of farms, however, is impacting everything from cooperatives and agricultural lenders to school systems and opportunities for beginning farmers. Stock and awe. Startups around the country are developing systems that capture the data that today's technology-laden tractors, combines, and seeders spew by the second. Their idea is to store the data in digital silos that farmers can then use to reap profits from the technological revolution sweeping U.S. farming, as well as to give them more control over the information their farms generate. Large companies like Deere, Monsanto, and Cargill already have tools to analyze farmers' data, but startups like FarmMobile LLC, Granular Inc., and Grower Information Services believe farmers can get more out of the information by analyzing it themselves. Farmers could further profit by selling the data to input dealers, equipment manufacturers, and future traders. Sunny with a chance of lawsuits. Monsanto's $57 billion sale to the German company Bayer AG is progressing and is expected to close early in 2018, creating the world's largest supplier of pesticides, seeds, and crop genes. Monsanto's bottom line benefited in its last quarter with the introduction of genetically engineered soybeans designed to resist the herbicide dicamba as well as glyphosate. More than 20 million acres were planted with the new seeds, and a demand of 40 million acres is expected next season. But there is a fly in the ointment. Dicamba is prone to volatilize, which means it can easily drift. It's reported an estimated 3 million acres of crops were damaged by drifting dicamba. Monsanto claims farmers sprayed unapproved formulations of dicamba on the resistant crops, but Monsanto's approved formulations also appear to drift. Expect lawsuits. Stay tuned. Toward a more precise future. Deere and Company has agreed to purchase Blue River Technologies, which is known for its See and Spray technology, a machine learning technology enabling growers to reduce the use of herbicides by only spraying the weeds that are present. Deere said it will invest $305 million to fully acquire the Sunnyvale, California-based company, which in 2017 was listed by Inc. magazine as one of the country's most disruptive. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. Wheat Week, a program operated by the Franklin County Conservation District and funded by the Washington Grain Commission, had a banner 2016-2017 school year. The program, which primarily teaches fifth grade students science and math concepts through examples found in the world of wheat, reached more than 26,000 students on both the east and west sides of the state, as well as nearly 1,100 teachers. Students and teachers reached by the program respond with cards of thanks. Teacher Lisa Lockwood at Central Elementary in Ferndale, Washington said, "Thank you so very much for financially supporting Wheat Week in our public schools. Having our students fully engaged in understanding this important part of our state's economy is magnificent." And from Lauren, a student at Sunset View Elementary in Kennewick, comes this. "Dear Washington wheat farmers, thank you for working really hard each and every day. Before Wheat Week, I didn't know anything about wheat. Now I know a lot, and I appreciate farmers more. Thank you so much. I appreciate you very much. Keep doing a good job." Now back to the news. 1890 or bust. Benjamin Harrison was president the last time wheat acreage in the United States fell to current levels. The U.S. Department of Agriculture pegged the 2017 wheat harvest as the smallest harvested acreage since 1890 at 37.6 million acres. From that acreage, 47.4 million metric tons, or 1.7 billion bushels of wheat, were harvested, down 25% from last year and 15% below the five-year average. Pacific Northwest soft white wheat production was down 11% from last year to 215.8 million bushels. Washington all wheat production was 142.5 million bushels, declining 7% from 157.3 million bushels in 2016. The winter wheat average yield was pegged at 73 bushels an acre, down from a record 78 bushels an acre in 2016. Spring wheat production suffered on hot temperatures and lack of moisture, with the average yield coming in at 45 bushels an acre compared to 51 bushels an acre a year earlier. Competitors, not colleagues. Soft red wheat is one of the six classes of wheat grown in the United States, same as soft white wheat. But soft red is also soft white's closest competitor. Soft red is predominantly grown in states east of the Mississippi. The class produced 292 million bushels of wheat this year, down 15% from last year and 32% off the region's five-year average. A total of 14 states grow soft red, but the crop is primarily a rotation for corn, soybeans, and hay. Typically, soft red exports are what's left over after domestic buyers have made their purchases, and the quality is quite variable. Balancing Act. The U.S. wheat industry has been attempting to thread the needle between advocating for international trade and keeping on the good side of the Trump administration. The loss of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Treaty, which Trump disowned, was a blow to the industry, which exports half of its production. In place of the TPP, the wheat industry was promised a series of bilateral trade agreements. Those have not been forthcoming, and while Vince Peterson, president of U.S. Wheat Associates, is glad there hasn't been any rash decisions about withdrawing from existing trade agreements, the wheat industry needs more than that. In the decade since the Korean Free Trade Agreement was signed in 2007, there have been no new trade agreements and zero additional market access for wheat farmers. Although the administration has committed to do no harm to agriculture, Peterson says there is harm in not negotiating new agreements. According to Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue, Japan will be the first target for new bilateral talks. Perdue said the U.S. needs to improve trade relationships with Pacific Rim countries where competitors like Australia and the European Union have advantages over the U.S. Covering their bases. Mexican milling and baking authorities have indicated that despite their government's efforts to identify wheat from origins other than the U.S., they don't want to change suppliers. Mexico, however, is hedging its bets because of rhetoric from the Trump administration surrounding the North American Free Trade Agreement and the controversial border wall. U.S. Wheat Associates continues in a business-as-usual approach. In September, a transportation and logistics workshop was conducted in Querétaro, Mexico, with participants representing 90% of the installed wheat capacity in Mexico. Ordinarily, Mexico is only just behind Japan as the number one destination for wheat from the U.S., but in the 2016-2017 marketing year, the country was number one. It is also the U.S. corn market's number one destination. South to the future. With the Egyptian market, the largest market in the world, now in the pocket of the Black Sea states of Russia, Ukraine, and Kazakhstan, Latin America's role in U.S. wheat exports is rising. The effect has seen U.S. Wheat Associates gearing up efforts in Central and South America. That recently included a baking seminar for San Martin Bakery in Guatemala. The week-long training included classes on production, quality control, and logistics with the goal of providing tools to allow on-site staff to troubleshoot production issues and make technical decisions that reduce production costs. In Costa Rica, baking seminars were held with Walmart baking plant staff. Walmart has 750 stores located across Central America, but only has baking plants in Costa Rica and Guatemala. Working with Walmart allows U.S. Wheat Associates to improve bread quality across several markets simultaneously in order to boost consumption. Stacking the snacking. Snacking only dates back 100 years and was initially tied to special occasions like circuses and fairs. Not anymore. The phenomenon of grazing that started more than 3 decades ago has become willy-nilly consumption that has disrupted the classic American diet of 3 meals a day. Once upon a time, a snack was considered an indulgence. Today's snack is anything that is small, increasingly nutritious, portable, and can replace a meal. The percentage of Americans who snack three or more times a day rose to 56% by 2010 from 20% in the late 1990s and 10% in the late 1970s. The biggest change impacts breakfast, with about one-third of Americans eating an early morning snack, up from 14% in 2015. Don't hold your breath. Australian researchers have identified a naturally occurring wheat gene that, when turned off, eliminates self-pollination but still allows cross-pollination. The research, which was done in collaboration with DuPont Pioneer, has the potential to change the way wheat is bred, opening the way for breeding high-yielding hybrid wheats. Hybrid wheat results from crosses between two selected pure wheat lines and is widely used for corn and rice. But two researchers at Washington State University caution farmers not to hold their breath. Mike Pumphrey, WSU's spring wheat breeder, who has read the paper outlining the Australian research, said, "I am personally not sure how much closer this means hybrid wheat is coming to the majority of fields near you." Kim Campbell, club wheat breeder with the Agricultural Research Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, agreed. "Hybrid wheat will not depend as much on the mechanisms of making the hybrid as the ability to produce enough seed to justify the development costs," she said. Syngenta has been working with hybrid wheat development using another method, and the company has hinted that hybrids will be available within the next few years. And now, a word from our sponsor. At current prices, less than 4 cents from each bushel of wheat and barley that farmers produce and sell in eastern Washington fuels the important activities of the farmer-directed Washington Grain Commission. That includes the $2.4 million the commission sets aside for research priorities, as well as the $1.2 million directed to marketing and the $537,000 for educational activities in this year's budget. The state grain elevator industry has been a reliable partner for the almost 60 years since the Grain Commission's precursor, the Washington Wheat Commission, was established in 1958, regularly submitting the assessment income farmers have voted to earmark for commission activities. Any first point of sale purchasers of wheat and barley, including craft brewers, distillers, flour mills, livestock and dairy operations, as well as farmer-to-farmer sales and direct-to-consumer transactions, have an obligation to report and remit assessment income. It's only fair everyone operates from the same set of rules to support the future of the Eastern Washington small grain industry. And we're back. Want a health perk? Drink coffee! Studies are increasingly revealing the positive health effects of drinking coffee moderately, up to 5 cups a day being moderate. It may protect against certain diseases like liver disease, cancer, and stroke, among others. It also provides a brain boost, both immediate and long-term, even helping to protect against Alzheimer's disease. Finally, coffee can extend your life, and it doesn't matter whether it's caffeinated or not. But don't despair if you drink tea. It's good for you as well. New findings from a study at the University of California, Los Angeles, has found black tea, through a specific mechanism in the gut microbiome, contributes to good health and weight loss in humans. Lies, damn lies, and statistics. It's estimated that China has around 50% of the world's wheat stocks, but can you believe it? China announced a crackdown on false statistics earlier this year. A circular was posted on the China State Administration of Grain website that said, "While progress has been made in reforming the statistical system for grain marketing, there are still some problems that can't be ignored, including the filing of untrue statistical reports." According to the document, there will be strict accountability in the future for local officials who falsify participants in statistical surveys or report fake numbers. That's it for this edition of the World Wheat O'Clock Report. Hoping you'll tune in again for more international and domestic news about our favorite crop. And I'm back. That is Scott Yates, who is Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission. A few announcements before I close. I'm sure the younger set knows this, but the old-timers might not. On smartphones, whether they're an iPhone or an Android product, most recent iterations have a podcast button on the home screen. Touch that, type Weed All About It in the Finder, and you're set. Future episodes simply download there. Easy! Since you're already listening, it's unlikely you need a podcast primer. But I'm requesting you share the information with those who might not be as savvy as you. Show your friends, landlords, and agribusiness contacts how easy it is to listen to Weed All About It on long drives or at the end of the day in your easy chair. Right here and now, I'd like a pledge from all of you who are listening to bring 5 more listeners into the Weed All About It fold before the end of the year. 5. It's not that many, but it will make a big difference as we approach the end of the first year of this podcast. That's all the time we have. I hope you enjoyed the show and will join me again next time for another episode of Weed All About It!